it's that time again, and the doctor is in. Yeah, it's time once again for Dr. Bill, the computer curmudgeon. And I'm glad you dropped by our podcast this week as we get into the wild and wacky and crazy world of tech. Yeah, you know you love it. Technology, that's just where it's at. We have such fun with our toys, don't we? Yes, indeed. The doctor's enjoying his toys. I hope you're enjoying yours. Yeah, I know you're bound to be. I mean, you're sitting there listening to an MP3 over the internet through streaming audio, or maybe you downloaded it into your iPod, and you're sitting there in your car driving to work listening to your iPod. Or perhaps you're just kicked back and saying, you know, I think I'll just listen to Dr. Bill today and just enjoy his take on technology. Well, that's a good idea because the doctor won't steer you wrong. That's right. All right, we're, just for those of you that are keeping score, and I know some of you do, you're sitting there ready to write. Well, here you go. Dr. Bill, the Computer Curmudgeon, podcast number 20, the 20th continuous week of airing the podcast. You know, it's kind of funny how we say airing a podcast. It's not like it's a radio broadcast that's being aired across the airwaves, but we do record it that way. You know, I always record the podcast live, just as it happens. And whatever happens, happens. Yeah, last week, you know, I actually got mail during the podcast, and I had a little beep go off, and it kind of took me a little bit by surprise. You'll be glad to know that I have turned off the little notification there, the pop tray notification, so that we won't be interrupted this week. And by the way, this is podcast for Saturday, January 21st, 2006. And you know, I'm still not used to it being 2006. I just am having a hard time with it being 2006. I don't know what it is. It's just, you know, just snuck up on me somehow. At any rate, let's look at what we've been blogging about this week on Dr. Bill the Computer Curmudgeon, the blog. Which, by the way, I would love, oh, absolutely love for you to come by to thecomputercurmudgeon.com. I know some of you have a setup for the podcast to be downloaded automatically through the wonders of RSS, really simple syndication, where you just set us up to download right into your computer and then to your iPod. But you know, you're missing out if you don't come by Dr. Bill the Computer Curmudgeon, the blog, every week and read about what it is that's got me kind of fascinated about technology. So far this week, it's been kind of a little bit of a slack week actually for technology, but we've got some things to talk about, so never fear. One thing I wanted to talk about that I mentioned in the blog is that there is a new version of Skype out. I mentioned that before, I believe. And this one, version 2.0, is winning over some of its critics. Now, I've been a user of Skype, and I had moved on over to the Gizmo Project. And I really like the Gizmo Project. It allows certain things that Skype at least didn't do. I'll have to try the new version again because, you know, they keep improving and coming up with new things. And you can sort your contacts into groups. You can have mood messages. Oh, there's all kinds of interesting little tidbits that they've added into that version. So I'll have to check it out. I'm one to kind of let the technology settle out before I settle in to the one that I'm really going to go with. But I do like the Gizmo Project too. So it's going to be kind of a battle between Skype and the Gizmo Project for me. And I'm still waiting for one. This is an interesting one. I don't know if you listen to Steve Gibson's podcast, Security Now, but he mentioned in one of his podcasts, talking with Leo Laporte, that he's working on a basically Skype-like, Gizmo Project-like voice over IP, but he's doing it specifically so that you can do podcasts and interview people over voice over IP. So he's trying to get rid of all the latency, and he's trying to make the quality of the audio as crisp as he can. That sounds interesting. I'd like to see that. I'm looking forward to it when he gets it fully developed. He's gotten, you know, he writes everything in a similar. Steve Gibson's just one of these guys that, I don't know, I get a little, just a little bit jealous of his ability to think in assembly language and write that kind of code that's just so incredibly tight. He prides himself on the fact that all of his code is so tight that the executable is tiny because he writes it all in assembler. I mean, it's just amazing to me. But anyway, you know, I'm not a programmer. I'm a system geek. And so, you know, anybody that can really program at that kind of level, at that kind of quality, just amazes me. We'll talk a little bit more about Steve and his recent excitement a little bit later in the podcast. But anyway, I am looking forward to what he's developing. I think it's going to be really good, you know. And I might as well go ahead and get into what Steve brought up in his last, well, next to last security now, as this is being recorded. He brought up the fact that Evil Empire, which for those of you that don't know is Microsoft. Yeah, you got that right, Microsoft. They're the Evil Empire. Yeah. Bill, come on. Down. Dr. Bill has to put up with Uncle Bill. Uncle Bill is Bill Gates, you know. He's the one with the mask and the dark hood thing. And yeah, okay, anyway. The thing about Microsoft is they seem to have written some code into their Windows Metafile schema, if you will. And in that code, it seems that they intentionally included the ability, if you have the right code string, to execute code from within an image file. And it doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean, you have an image file, you have code hidden in that, and then there's a quote, unquote, feature in Windows that executes the executable code in that image file. That's weird. What would you do with that? Oh, I don't know. Maybe like execute code that users aren't expecting to have executed. That's been the problem with the WMF Windows problem that was uncovered, is it turns out that people were using that to write nasty code, then putting the images on websites, and then when people just kind of came browsing by casually, it was executing the code on their computers. That's called bad news, okay? Well, anyway, Microsoft, of course, denies all, as they would. But Steve Gibson claimed in a Security Now podcast that Microsoft had a true backdoor in Windows. And, you know, I mentioned in the blog that, man, Steve, you better watch out and watch for the death squads to show up. I mean, that's a pretty serious thing to say, and I'm sure he got a lot of flack over that. In his most recent podcast, he's recanted what he said, not in substance, but in method. He's saying that he shouldn't have said it was a back door that was left there on purpose by Microsoft. He is saying it's a back door. He is saying it was done on purpose, but he's saying it wasn't necessarily done and sanctioned by Microsoft. It could have been done by just simply the programmer that was working on that code. But it seems to me that it's a little weird that Steve has been able to determine that that code was not present in the same form in Windows 95, Windows 98, Windows ME, but only in 2000 and XP. Very strange. So in other words, they introduced something that is being used maliciously in a later version of Windows, not that it was in the earlier version and then got removed in the quote-unquote more secure later version, which seems to bolster his idea that it was on purpose that it was added in. Now, he's saying now he should not imply that he knows that it was Microsoft on purpose doing this, that it could have been a backdoor left by a renegade Microsoft programmer. I don't know. I kind of like the idea that somewhere behind the scenes at Microsoft, somewhere, there was heard, we must leave a back door because you never know when we might need it. The force is strong with this one. Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how it all comes out. I'm going to stay tuned on that one. How's that? All right, other things that are happening. 404 pages are very interesting critters on the internet. You know, there's always been the need on the internet to have a page that basically says, okay, you came to my website and you tried to find a page, but dude, the page ain't here, okay? And so what you do is you put up an error page, and usually the error page is boring. Oh man, it is like mega boring. Nice white page, tiny black letters that says, 404, error, you have reached a page that it does not exist. Please go back and try again, or whatever, you know, some little dumb message. And so lately, people have been making very pretty, nice 404 pages. You know, even the page for Dr. Bill, drbillbailey.net, I should say, my kind of my main site, you know, it's got the Dr. Bill Bailey.net header, and it's got the little image, and it's got the little buttons so that you can hover over them. So anyway, a 404 page is just there to be handy. It's there to help the user on the website find out what he's looking for. But sometimes people that write websites come up with really cool ideas. And this particular one is a very cool idea. And I'm going to click on it here because it actually has some audio. It's a flash animation. There's a little, kind of little frog character. He pulls a switch and it says, error 404, page not found. Then he bounces out and he looks really annoyed. He taps on the screen and he looks really annoyed. What are you still doing here? He's trying to get your attention. He points up and says, error 404. And then he goes, ah, they're not getting it. So he goes down and he puts up a sign that says, go away. Well, dude, you've got such a fun 404 page. We want to watch it. Oh, he's getting mad now. He's getting mad. Threw away his sign. Oh, my. He put up a big sign that says, the page cannot be found. Oh, he slammed the door. He's so mad. The page you're looking for might have been removed or something. Whatever. It's not here. This is my space. I bought it fair and square, so quit coming around. Please try the following. Hit the back button. Go to lookitsme.co.uk homepage and see what you can find from there. Shut down your computer and take it back to the store. Honestly, I just don't care. Get off my property. I mean it. And then he says, 404, file not found. That's just so cool. And you say, I know, Dr. Bill, you're just so easily amused. I don't know. It's just kind of cool. You got to admit, it's just fun. Anyway, I thought that was kind of a cool, wacky 404 page, and it was just worth sharing. So I wanted to share that with you. All right, what else we got? Well, I get emails. The doctor gets weird emails from people who are, how can I put this delicately, less computer savvy. Yes, that will do. That will do nicely. They have issues with their computer that they have to deal with, and so they call up the good doctor and say, Dr. Bill, what am I going to do? And this guy called up, or sent me an email actually, sent me an email and said, you know, I'm having problems with my computer. It's just going nutty. It goes to websites I don't want to go to. I've got all these issues, and I seem to have a virus. And so I said, look, I just knew. You know, when you've been working with computers and listening to folks' horror stories long enough, you just know. I knew he had to be using McAfee or Norton, the two lamest antiviruses in the entire universe. And so I said, look, here's what you do. Go out and download from grassoff.com their free antivirus AVG. Install it, take two aspirin, call me in the morning, run it, and let me know what happens. Well, he sent an email back and says, oh, Dr. Bill, you are so amazing. I downloaded AVG, I installed it, it cleaned up all the viruses. Life is good. You are a genius. No kidding. That's what he said. However, he said, now, there's only one thing. My browser still goes off, not where I intend it to go, but to some other site that I don't want to go to. What can I do about browser hijacking? So I told him. Then I said, you know, there's got to be a lot of other people who need to know what to do about browser hijacking. And so I wrote a blog entry. Your problem becomes my blog entry. That's just the way it works. So here we go. I gave you a link in the blog entry that takes you to spywareinfo.com. Spywareinfo.com is kind of a, you might say, an online magazine that talks about spyware and spyware issues, and it's pretty cool little thing. It's not super wonderful great, but yeah, it's pretty good. Anyway, they've got a browser hijacking article that I really like. It's by Mike Keelan. It was written in 2004 and updated in 2005, but it really hits the nail on the head. He talks about browser hijacking and what it is, and then he says the first thing, the very first thing you need to do to solve your browser hijacking problem, and here's how he says it. First and most simply, stop using Internet Explorer. Hello! How many times have I told you, stop using Internet Explorer, and yet people still continue to use it? The doctor tells you these things for your own good. So you need to do what I prescribe. Stop using Internet Explorer. And so I'll continue here. He says, if you use Mozilla, Firefox, or Opera, you are immune to nearly all browser hijackers. You're safe for two reasons. First, most people use Internet Explorer, so most malicious code is custom built to exploit it. Well, yeah. And second, Opera and Mozilla's programmers take security very seriously, implying that Microsoft doesn't. Just thought I'd throw that in. And it made these browsers very secure. Okay. Now, he goes on to say, for some people that have to use Microsoft Internet Explorer, and you know who you are, because maybe your workplace, maybe somebody somewhere has your hand twisted around behind your back, and they're crushing it up against your back and twisting it, saying, okay, look, this is where it's going to be. You're going to use Internet Explorer. You're not going to get on the Internet. You hear me? If that's the case, I'm so sorry for you. But, okay, here's what you do. It's not an option. You've got to use Internet Explorer. Well, you need to update your browser and your operating system as best you can. Go to Windows Updates, install security patches, do everything you can, and at least get it up to the latest version. Because Microsoft, they've supplied a lot of patches to fix as many things as they can. Now, unfortunately, it's still not going to be as good as Mozilla, as good as Opera, as good as all the others, but at least it's a start. Okay, so do that. Then, after you've done that, replace the Microsoft Java VM, if you have that installed, with Sun Java. You go to download that from www.java.com. There are several hijackers that exploit flaws in Microsoft's Java VM. Now, it's important that if you have the Microsoft Java VM installed and you install the Sun VM virtual machine, the Java virtual machine, go into Internet Explorer, into Tools, Options, and go in there and uncheck Microsoft Virtual Machine. Close out your browser, open it back up, and then you'll be using only Sun Java. That's important to do that. All right. Then go into Internet Options from the Windows Control Panel, click Security, highlight the Internet icon, and then click Custom Level. Choose Medium, click Reset, click OK, click Custom Level again, and then set your options like this. Excuse me again. .NET Framework Reliant Components. Run components not assigned with AuthentiCode. Set that to Disable. Run components signed with AuthentiCode. Set to Prompt. ActiveX Controls and Plugins. Download signed ActiveX Controls. Set to Prompt. Download unsigned ActiveX Controls. Disable. Initialize and script ActiveX Controls not marked as safe, click that to disable. Run ActiveX Controls and Plugins enabled. This actually refers to Java and Flash, not to ActiveX. Good old Microsoft, they're so clear on these things. Script ActiveX Controls marked safe for scripting, put it to prompt, and then go into miscellaneous and access data sources across domains, disable, drag and drop copy and paste files, prompt, installation of desktop files, prompt, launching programs and files in an iframe, prompt, navigate subframes across different domains, prompt, software channel permissions, high safety, user data persistence, disable, then under scripting, allow paste operations via script, prompt, scripting of Java applets, prompt. Okay? Now, all that is on this page, spywareinfo.com/article/hijack/prevent.php. Go there. Read it. Check it out. Next, it says you need to run a registry script called IE Spy Ads. This script will place an enormous number of websites known to be abusive to Internet Explorer's restricted zone. Any site in that list will be unable to run JavaScripts, Java applets, set to read cookies, or use ActiveX scripting. You'll still be able to visit the sites, but you'll be very limited in what you can do for your own security. Okay? Now, be aware that Microsoft Internet Explorer has many security flaws, I should say, that will allow a clever site designer to bypass security settings, even if their site is in the restricted zone. More still must be done. Now you need to install Spyware Blaster. Hello! That's another one that I recommend very highly. Download the latest version of Spyware Blaster, install it, and make sure that your signature files in Spyware Blaster are current and updated, and that you have enabled all protection. That will help tremendously. Okay. Finally, be careful about installing programs. By far the most common source of malware infection comes from third-party bundles. Grokster, for instance. Oh, man, Grokster. Don't get me started. We'll install a dozen or more unwanted programs. People just don't install stuff you don't know what it does. Finally, disable the preview pane if you use Outlook or Outlook Express. And I would just say don't use them. You've got alternatives. You've got Thunderbird. You've got web-based email. There's just so many alternatives. Don't use Outlook or Outlook Express. Okay, he's got a few other things that he recommends which, you know, are good. But those are the main ones. If you do those, you'll be in good shape. Okay? Listen to the doctor. It's good for you. Okay. Now, just as a side item, I was talking about the blog and using the blog. There's a new feature available in the blog, Dr. Bill the Computer Curmudgeon, which is the Tech News feature. You can actually go on our right-hand column of the screen. At the very top, there's a thing that says Pages. First one is Contact Dr. Bill. That's me. Then you've got Dr. Bill Podcast Streaming Audio so that you can listen to it right online. Then you got the new item, Tech News Feed. Click it, as I just did, and ta-da, the tech news from Beta News. And you can go through and read right up to the minute tech news, and it's good for you. You'll find out what's happening in the tech world. Excellent. Excellent. Okay. Very quickly, we're running out of time. I do want to talk about a couple of more things. One is, very quickly, IEEE has passed the 802.11n standard draft. Now, it doesn't mean they've approved the final one, but they've approved a draft version of the 802.11n wireless standard. Now, you might say, well, what's in it for me? Well, 600 megabits per second throughput over wireless. Oh, man. Rock on. Right now, wireless G supports 54 megabit per second. This is going to be 600. Man, that's awesome. I mean, you know, that's just over half a gig a bit of throughput over the ether. Awesome. That's going to be so cool. All right, another one very quickly. High-res photo of Pluto probe liftoff. The New Horizons probe lifted off this past week, and there's a really cool photo of it, high-res photo of it, and it just caught my attention because it is just so awesome. In 1969, I can remember the Apollo Saturn V rocket lifting off. Man, biggest rocket ever made, even to this day, the biggest physical rocket ever made. Yet, even with that, it took them 3 days plus to get to the moon. From the Earth to the Moon. That's like, what, 250,000 roughly miles? Wow. 3 days roughly. This rocket was able to get from the Earth to the moon and past it in 9 hours. Thing was flying. Rock on. That is just so cool. So I had to put that photo in there and say, check this out. This is really cool. Now, 10 years from now, wow, 10 years from now, we'll actually get telemetry from the probe and we'll get to see Pluto and its moons. And they even discovered 2 new moons just preparing for this probe. That's just so cool. Anyway, I'm kind of into space and technology, and so it kind of caught my eye, and I really like it. All right, here's a serious note. I don't always like to get serious, but this is a serious note. This is a little blog entry I have about the Bush administration versus Google. The Bush administration has requested that all the different search engines cooperate with their plan to figure out what people are searching for when they search for pornography. Now, I'm all for catching the porn purveyors. I'm all for the State Department or whoever it is, law enforcement agencies, tracking them down and, you know, stopping them from spreading porn to children. That's just me. It shouldn't be out there as accessible and available for kids to get, okay? But, you knew there was a but coming. The but is that they're turning up the heat on Google and other search engines to turn over to them the search patterns of individuals. And, you know, I don't have anything to hide. If they want to look at what I'm searching, I don't have any problem with it whatsoever. But to do it in such a way that after the fact they request it, they get it, and the person who did the search isn't even aware that what they're looking at is being checked out, just doesn't sit well with me. And as I mentioned in the blog entry, look, I am a tried and true conservative. I just absolutely admire President Bush. I support the war on terrorism. I want him to track down and prosecute these porn pushers, but I'm also a privacy advocate. I do believe that we as American citizens have the right to do our searches online, to be online, without having Big Brother stare over our shoulder, okay? And that bugs me. And yet, at the same time, I know that there's certain things they've got to search for. For instance, I really don't have a problem with them searching for and finding people that are planning on blowing up Americans, okay? I mean, come on. We complain about security agencies and law enforcement not dealing with terrorism. I mean, people got all bent out of shape, and why couldn't they have stopped September 11? And yet then they turn around and say, but you can't do this, you can't do that, we're not going to let you do this, we're not going to let you do that. I mean, come on, guys. They've got to have a way to track down the bad guys. And technology gives them a lot of ways to track down the bad guys. But at the same time, see, here's where I have such an issue. At the same time, they've got to be able to do it and preserve law-abiding American citizens' rights to privacy and, you know, have, where we're not unnecessarily persecuted or prosecuted in some cases for simply being online and doing normal things. So this is an issue that I don't think is going to go away anytime soon. And it's a very serious issue. It's a very sticky issue. And it's one that I'll admit openly, I don't have an answer for. I really don't, because I know some of this has got to be done, but I just don't know how or where you're going to draw the line and have it done in the right manner, okay? Now, I know that a lot of people are anti-Bush, a lot of people are anti his administration. You know, they're attacking him, and they're saying, you know, he's like a fascist dictator and all this kind of stuff. I don't buy into any of that, but at the same time, though their motives may be pure as the driven snow, if that kind of technology, the ability to search through records of ordinary American citizens' search patterns and what they do online, if that's made available, then the next administration or the next administration or the next administration, I don't care what their political party, is going to have access to this kind of technology as well. And they may misuse it, okay? So I'm just saying we've got to be aware. We've got to kind of watch our backs, you might say, and realize that this is going on. A lot of times for our own good, but nevertheless, it just kind of does bug me. Okay, so there you go. I tell you, that's about as heavy an issue, I think, as I've talked about in the blog or on the podcast ever. But it is something that's really kind of, I've been turning around in my mind. You know, where do you draw the line? So there you go. All right, let's end up on